Welcome to Radio Naturopath. It's the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. It's June 19th, 2019. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. All right. So a couple of weeks ago, I gave a talk about cholesterol and what it is and some updates and what are some interests in cholesterol. So I thought that I would talk about that on the air and we'd get it on a nice podcast and, you know, then you'll have some good information about the whole deal with cholesterol, which I'm sure your doctor is talking to you about, perhaps asking you to take a statin drug or some other kind of drug to get your cholesterol down, and telling you that your high cholesterol, that any amount of cholesterol in your body is going to kill you. That's what I often hear. So anyway, so let's get talking about that. So anyway, what in the heck is cholesterol? It's a specific type of fat molecule found in our bodies. And it's very, very important. It's a precursor to hormones. So that's all reproductive hormones, such as estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. And it's also a precursor to cortisol, which is your fight or flight hormone. And cholesterol is part of the structure of all of the cell membranes in our body. So every single cell in your body is covered in cholesterol. It's a fatty substance that allows, that when it's in good shape, it allows substances to pass in and out of your cells, things like vitamins, minerals, sugars, the things that need to go in and out of your cells. It is a precursor to vitamin D3. So vitamin D is a hormone as well as a vitamin. It is an essential vitamin, so you do need to, it's considered to be a vitamin being a molecule that you need to ingest or somehow produce in our bodies because our bodies can't do it by itself. You can't make vitamin D on your own. You have to be exposed to sunlight to make vitamin D. You can also eat vitamin D, but if you never were exposed to sun and you never ate vitamin D, you would become vitamin D deficient in a very serious way. So vitamin D is a very important vitamin / hormone that is synthesized from cholesterol in our skin. So it's super important. So the question is, why does your doctor want you on a statin? Well, here's the deal. So statin, first of all, what is a statin? A statin is a drug that is an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. So HMG-CoA reductase is an enzyme that produces cholesterol. And so it's in the cholesterol production pathway. And what statins do is they block that enzyme. You block that enzyme, your cholesterol goes down just like that. Unfortunately, when you block cholesterol, the other thing that's in the pathway of cholesterol production is coenzyme Q10, which is an extremely important nutrient in your body. You do produce your own coenzyme Q10, but you can also take it externally. And coenzyme Q10 runs the electron transport chain. So it's important for, again, every single cell in your body for it to produce energy. So if you take a statin, you will block your CoQ10. If you are taking a statin, you should be taking CoQ10. If your doctor did not tell you to take CoQ10 and you're on a statin, your doctor was remiss. Yes. Okay, so here's the deal. Over 100 years ago in Germany, this dude named Rudolf Virchow theorized that the cholesterol-containing atherosclerotic plaques, those are the blockages in your arteries, that he found in corpses were because of high blood cholesterol. And not necessarily the case. And then there was Dr. Ansel Keys. And I really want to get a t-shirt that says Ansel Keys was wrong. I'm going to have that made at some point. If you want to get me a cool gift,
novelty thing.
Get me a t-shirt that says Ansel Keys was wrong. All right.
Okay.
So Ansel Keys' 7-country study concluded that high-fat diets were the cause of coronary artery disease. He excluded data from 15 countries that were also studied. So that he would make his data look like it was because of the high-fat diet. Yeah. So doctors continue to be taught that high cholesterol levels alone lead to cardiovascular disease. There's a study at MIT that shows that they don't lower all-cause mortality. And that they have also, that statins have concerning side effects. I already talked about how they reduce coenzyme Q10, which is part of the energy centers of every cell in your body. It's also an antioxidant that acts in your mitochondria, the place where the energy in your cells is produced. And if it's depleted, there can be damage to any cell in your body. People who take statins can feel tired, have impaired liver function, increased risk of diabetes, dementia, joint pain and body aches, and a serious condition called rhabdomyolysis, which is a dangerous breakdown of muscle tissue that can cause kidney failure. So, yay statins, right? All right. So here's the deal with, so is there any sort of a time that you should take a statin? So the question is, so that there were studies that were done that statins were seen to be beneficial in middle-aged men who had already had a heart attack. So if you already had a heart attack or a stroke and you're making poor quality cholesterol, like your cholesterol is oxidized and you have other inflammatory markers, which we're going to talk about, it might be a good idea to do that. But people are put on statins preventatively. If they're cholesterol, the reference range for LDL cholesterol, which is your low density lipoprotein, is now down to 100, which means, interestingly, that most people are going to have high cholesterol because it's very hard to get your LDL below 100 without extreme measures.
Does that mean the numbers are off?
Well, that the numbers are, well, what it means, it's all about what you believe about what cholesterol does to you.
Oh, okay.
So if you, the thing is, cholesterol all by itself doesn't give you cardiovascular disease, and that's my whole point. And they've made the reference range. The reference range used to be, for LDL, used to be 130, and now it's down to 100, which means that most people that I test have high cholesterol. Who wins in this scenario?
The drug companies.
That's what I wonder. I mean, that's kind of a radical thing to say, but that
shame on us.
I don't like to say things like that. I don't like to say things like that because, you know, I like to be careful about purporting conspiracy theories. But that's true. I mean, because if you lower the reference range of LDL cholesterol to 100, you're going to sell a lot more statins. That's true.
Makes sense to me.
Yes, because patients don't know any better. The doctors are going to tell them, look, you're at risk of cardiovascular disease. You don't want to get a heart attack or a stroke, do you? Take the statin. They're going to go, okay. And then they're going to go home and they're not going to feel well. And they're going to be like, what's going on? And some people, they take statins and they're like, you know, I feel awful on these. I can't take them. And they do. And they stop taking them. Some people just go that route. So anyway, so if you're an athlete and you take a statin, chances are you're not going to feel well. That's going to affect your exercise performance when you take that statin. Because think about what statins do. Statins, as we said, statins lower cholesterol. Cholesterol is part of the cell membranes in every cell in your body. Statins also lower CoQ10. If CoQ10 is part of the energy production cell in every in every cell in your body, and you lower a molecule that gives you good energy, what do you think is going to happen to your exercise performance?
It's going to get thumbs down.
That's right. So the right. Other thing about cholesterol is it's involved in cellular repair because it's part of all of the cell membranes in your body. And so what are you constantly doing when you're exercising?
Well, you're creating more of that.
So you're building up and you're breaking down tissue. That's right.
Yeah.
So if I'm going out for my bike ride this afternoon, I'm probably going to break down some muscle tissue because I'm going to beat on it climbing the hills.
How could you?
I know, right? And I'm going to be burning up fat tissue. So I'm going to use energy to do that. I'm going to need CoQ10 in all of my cells to do all of those efforts, you know, to produce the energy that's going to make me do the stuff. I'm going to be breaking down tissue so I can put sugar into my blood so I can get up the hill. So that's one of the things that's going to happen. So what do you think has to happen? And then whenever you use your muscles, right now, if you could see me, you would see that I'm making a point by moving my hand back and forth, right? I'm using my muscles right now, right?
So good at it, too.
I know. Whenever you use your muscles, there is some breakdown and repair that happens. So what do you think is going to happen to your muscles if they don't have enough cholesterol around to make cell membranes? They're not going to repair as well. Right. So if you're an athlete, you're beaten on your muscles all the time and you need to have good cellular repair. That's why when you're an athlete, your protein needs are higher so that you can rebuild your muscles. So whenever you do cardio exercise and certainly whenever you do resistance training, the point of doing resistance training is to build muscle mass. And if you take a statin, you're going to be less able to do that. So for exercise performance, statins can be really problematic. The other thing that statins do is they affect blood sugar. And how do they do that? Well, let's take it on back to the fact that you need cholesterol to build cell membranes in every cell in your body. So if you don't have well-functioning cell membranes, how do you expect the sugar to get in and out of your cells? Right? So you want the sugar to get into your cells so you can use it, and that lowers your blood sugar. You want the sugar to get into your cells if you're an athlete, because you need the sugar to power your electron transport chain and everything else that's going on inside of your cell. So if you have a drug that's lowering your cholesterol, you're not going to be as efficiently able to, anything that goes in and out of your cells isn't going to work as well, but sugar is one of them. And we do know, in fact, that it increases your risk of diabetes and blood sugar dysregulation if you take a statin. The other thing that you're at risk of is, guess what? Alzheimer's. So how does that work? Well, again, as you get older, you lose neurons. It's just the way of it. That's why, you have to make notes for yourself to remember where you put your keys and why you forgot where you put your cell phone and all that stuff. You lose some neuronal function, and that's why it's really important as we age to make sure that we take care of our brains by continuing to make new connections, by doing crossword puzzles, by being engaged, by taking fish oil, by eating fish, by getting enough essential fatty acids in our bodies, by doing the things that repair our brains. Now, if you lower your cholesterol, again, it is possible to make new nerve cells in your brain even as we age. And that's what neuroplasticity is. When you learn something, you're making new neural connections. If you don't have enough cholesterol, you're not going to be able to do that. And in fact, the natural buildup and repair of cells in your body, if your body wants to go and repair the cells in your brain, it's not going to do it as well. But what this is saying is specifically that you're at higher risk for Alzheimer's specifically. And Alzheimer's is a specific thing where you have the neuritic plaques and the neurofibrillary tangles that contain...
Tone tangles.
Yes, and that I know. And that they contain amyloid. So when you lower your cholesterol, your body is... I think it's just a matter of your body's just less likely to clean that stuff up. If you want to have a macrophage get in there, you have these blood cells called monocytes that are these big cells that are they're nonspecific immune cells, and they clean up... They're the garbage cells of the body. They go around and pick up trash. And so they do this magic thing. It's a funny thing. You have a couple cells like this that they're in your blood. They're a monocyte. They're out of your blood. They're a macrophage. They go back into your blood. They're a monocyte. They're out of your blood. They're a macrophage. They're in your blood. They're an eosinophil. They leave your blood. They're a mast cell. They're in your blood. They're an eosinophil. It's like if I were in the WHUS studio and my name was Fran and I walked out that door and suddenly my name is Elizabeth. But when I walk back into the studio, I'm Fran again. It's very cute. I don't know why they do that.
Well, you are Fran Elizabeth.
I am Fran Elizabeth.
It's all
right,
all
but
true.
But say I walked out this door and suddenly my name was Miranda. So when I'm in the blood, I'm Fran, and when I'm out of the blood, I'm Miranda. Well, when a monocyte is in the blood, it's a monocyte. When it's out of the blood, it's a macrophage. And an eosinophil is an eosinophil in the blood, and then it's a mast cell when it's out of the blood. Anyway, so the macrophage's job is to go around and pick up yucco. So if you had a cold or a flu, there's...
How do we go from that vocabulary to yucco? I just want...
Garbage, trash.
Do you find anything amusing about that?
Remnants of cells. remnants of cellular death. Yes, remnants of damage and destruction. So say you had a cold or bronchitis or something, and then, you've got done the virus, but now you're in the convalescent phase, and you've got mucus, you've got cellular parts, you've got scar tissue, you've got all kinds of stuff that needs to be cleaned up. That's why even though you feel better, you're still like coughing stuff up. So that's because your body has to do cellular repair. It's like, it's like there was a fire and you have to clean up the house after the fire happened. And so your macrophages, they're like the work crew. They'll go in and they'll pick up the crud that's left.
crud. We're back down to
cellular parts,
vocabulary.
Scar tissue, fibrous bits, dead neutrophils. There's all kinds of stuff that's included in crud. So the macrophage's job is to clean that up. So if your macrophages can't rebuild and repair themselves because they don't have enough cholesterol, how are you going to have macrophages that go into your brain and clean things up? Say you're in the process of making a neuritic plaque or neurofibrillary tangle, if you have well-functioning macrophages, they're going to go in and keep that at bay. But if you can't make them, you're going to make more of them and Alzheimer's.
I could use some macrophages.
Yeah. Well, you probably got some. Yeah. You got a lot of...
I could use some brain cleaning.
Well, you could need you need some deep cellular cleaning, Mr. Lime Boy.
I know. I got that lime thing.
Yes, this one had a lit up Western blot. It was pretty impressive. It was like no doctor would refuse him antibiotics looking at his Western blot. My goodness.
Yeah. And then there was my knee.
And
your knee was melon.
Yeah, you had melon. You had classic. It was very classic Lyme disease. You know, you don't see that all the time. You're always like, is it or isn't it? Should I treat him? There was no question with you. It's kind of awful and kind of cool.
And it was the general consensus of everyone that saw me too.
That's
like,
great.
Whoa, you got Lyme.
Yeah, and even me, because I did your labs, and I'm like, whoa. Yeah. All right. So so what do your test results mean when you get your lipid, when your doctor tests your cholesterol? So when you get a lipid panel, there's a bunch of things that come up on the basic lipid panel. One of them is LDL. So your LDL is your low-density lipoprotein. It's a protein that carries cholesterol from your liver to your body for use. It's decreased by exercising and reducing carbs and poor quality fats. So so you're going to have less need. Well, I think what happens is when the LDL is circulating, you're going to use it to some extent as a fuel and to another extent to repair stuff. So it's going to leave your circulation and go to repair stuff and be used. It's kind of like your blood sugar. Your blood sugar is going to be higher if you're at rest or you're not using it or you're not moving and exercising, and that your blood sugar is going to be lowered if you actually use your body and do stuff. So LDL is reduced by exercise because your body is then going to take that cholesterol and put it where it needs to go for repair and use and making vitamin D and all the other things that it does. HDL is high-density lipoprotein. This protein carries cholesterol from your body back to your liver for processing, and it's increased by exercise and good quality fats. So HDL... and the higher your HDL is, the lower your cardiovascular risk. So people can have really high HDL. And by the way, high HDL can raise your total cholesterol number. And you'll see people who get put on statins when they have low LDL and high HDL because their total cholesterol is out of range. And I look at that, and this is where you use the SMH emoticon a lot. That's not how it's supposed to work. High HDL grabs onto cholesterol. So if there's too much cholesterol circulating, that's potentially going to be oxidized and block your arteries. HDL is going to pick that cholesterol up and take it back to the liver. And then it gets to, goes to the liver and it gets used to make other things. It can be used to make vitamin D and hormones and all the other things that cholesterol is used for, making cells, making liver cells, making proteins that are going to be used elsewhere in the body. So it's very, it's very useful. So it favors when you exercise and when you eat good fats, that favors repairing your body. And that's what the high HDL does for you. Triglycerides is the form that fat takes in your bloodstream to be used for energy or stored. It's also decreased by exercise, reducing carbohydrates and fish oil. So if you have high triglycerides in your blood are a problem. I'm not as concerned about high LDL and high total cholesterol as I am about high triglycerides. So triglycerides are the form that fat takes when it's floating around in your blood. And that fat is readily available for use. So if you have triglycerides in your blood and you then go and do cardio exercise, you're going to use those triglycerides for energy. You're going to get free fatty acids that are going to be sent into your cells, and you're going to use them for energy. So triglycerides are directly lowered by exercise. So if one of your problems is you have triglycerides, high triglycerides happen usually when you have a blood sugar dysregulation. You're eating too much starch and sugar, or you actually are pre-diabetic or starting on the road to type 2 diabetes. They can also be elevated if you have type 1 diabetes and your sugar isn't properly controlled. Triglycerides can be lowered by cardio exercise, as I said, and a really great way to lower them is if you can do this. If you can't do this, it's okay, but I'm going to tell you. If your doc says your triglycerides are too high, one way to lower them is to do cardio exercise fasted. That means do some cardio exercise first thing in the morning without eating anything. And when I say without eating anything, that means sort of the intermittent fasting definition of fasting. That doesn't mean don't drink water. In other words, it does mean do drink water. It's fine if you want to have unsweetened coffee or tea. And it's also fine if you want to have medium chain triglycerides. So if you want to put MCTs in some coffee so you can go work out, that's fine. That counts as fasting. And that will actually help you to lower your triglycerides. If you want to just drink water, that's fine too, if you can do it. People vary in their ability to do this. If you've got a metabolism like Ron, he can't possibly do that. But then Ron doesn't have high triglycerides. If you're me and you're like most people in the United States, most people in the United States do not have Ron's metabolism. That is why most people in the United States are overweight. So most of us probably could do some level of fasted exercise. Now, for me, I can only do so much. I don't recommend going out for a 30-mile bike ride or a two-hour hike without eating anything. But if you're going to go out for a half hour or perhaps as much as an hour. I know I can handle going to spin class in the morning or going for a gentle walk or a moderate walk even or a run fasted. And I can do that because I have thriftier genes than Ron does. You know, I have some extra body fat and I can absolutely do that. And so because I do several mornings of the week, I exercise fasted. I have nice low triglycerides and I have high HDL. So you can do this too. And by fasted exercise, I mean go out for a half hour walk. If you can go to an exercise class that lasts, you know, half an hour to an hour and you're comfortable, do it. If you get hypoglycemic and you feel terrible when you exercise fasted, don't do this. Right? It's only if you can do it. If you're able to do it and you feel okay doing it, then do it. But because it will lower your triglycerides. But if you can't do it, you probably don't have elevated triglycerides in the first place. And yet, I don't know. I mean, so the thing is, in any case, even if you do eat something, cardio exercise will help to lower your triglycerides. And then for somebody like me, you know, like when I get to the Saturday ride, I often haven't eaten yet because I just don't feel like it. I'm one of those people, I can't eat first thing in the morning. And so I carry food with me. And then as soon as I feel like eating, I start eating. And so maybe an hour into the ride, I'm going to need a snack or something to eat. And I do put stuff in my water bottle. I just wonder, I should start putting MCT in my water bottle. I'm going to try that today.
You should try that.
Yeah, okay. All right. What's VLDL? VLDL is usually not reported. When you get your lipid panel back from your doc, usually you're going to get LDL, HDL, triglycerides, and total cholesterol. You don't usually get reported VLDL unless you're using a specialty lab or some specialty orders. So VLDL is very low density lipoprotein, and it is the protein that carries triglycerides. All right. So LDL and HDL carry cholesterol. VLDL carries triglycerides. IDL is intermediate density lipoprotein, the remnants of the VLDL after they're done carrying triglycerides to the liver. So VLDL carries triglycerides to the liver for use, for your energy, to make glycogen, to make, whatever your body's going to use fats for structure and function. And then the VLDL that's left is called IDL. And so your total cholesterol is the sum of HDL, LDL, IDL, and VLDL. And that's why if you add up your LDL and HDL results, they don't add up to your total cholesterol because you haven't added in your IDL and your VLDL. So again, if you have high HDL, that can drive your total cholesterol number up. And if docs are being strict about, hey, your total cholesterol is over 200, it's too high, you might have high HDL and low LDL and get flagged. And they do, and it will be flagged on your sheet. If you have a smart doc, they'll look at it and go, well, you have low LDL and high HDL. Don't worry about it. So there was a recent study from the University of Zurich that found that statins may be overprescribed.
Well, D-U-H.
That the risks of taking them outweigh the benefits for many.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm getting Ron's reaction here.
I just, you know,
You can't even, right?
I can't. And you know, I obviously have a strong enough connection with you where I hear this ranting out of your mouth often, quite often.
I'm a ranter.
You are a ranter. You are a ranter, especially when there is a drug ad on TV or something like that.
Oh, don't even get me started.
The pharmaceutical ads. You want to set Fran off. Sit her down in front of a television set with pharmaceutical ads. It's such a good time.
I cannot believe, well, maybe we should get to this in a little bit, but anyway.
Okay, we can talk about that later.
We'll talk about that later. But
I think you may have to start Fran's Rant of the Week.
Yeah,
okay. Could be. We'll talk about that.
Positives, the Rant of the Week and the positive side.
Yeah, there you go.
I suppose I could do that.
Yeah, you could.
Okay, so the other thing is that, as we said, that statins may be overprescribed, that the risks of taking them outweigh the benefits for many, especially if used for primary prevention. That is, you haven't had a heart attack or a stroke, and nobody has any evidence that you have cardiovascular disease. So they're overprescribed for primary prevention. So docs are prescribing them. You have an LDL over 100, and people are being prescribed statins.
That's crazy.
You should look out that window.
Is there someone out there looking for me?
Yeah, maybe.
So then your
LDL particle. Okay, so there's some interesting things. Statins may be helpful if a patient is determined to be at a high risk for cardiovascular disease. So if you're at a high risk, maybe you should take a statin. It really depends. If you have angina already, if you have been, like if you've had a positive exercise stress test, meaning that your exercise stress test shows that you probably do have some atherosclerosis, or if you've had a calcium score study that's high, that you've had some kind of investigation that shows that you are at higher risk for cardiovascular disease. And I should say cerebrovascular disease as well. We don't want you having a stroke either. So what other factors are involved with cardiovascular risks? There are other tests besides the standard total cholesterol, HDL, LDL, and triglycerides. So LDL is measured in mass. That's milligrams per deciliter. That's how much space the LDL takes up. It's measured in particle size. That's the size of each LDL molecule. So if you have a mass, it's how much space the whole thing takes up. It's like milligrams per deciliter. So it's like if you had a cup of cholesterol, what fraction of cup of cholesterol do you have? Particle size is how many of the little bits of cholesterol are in that cup. And then particle number. No, I'm sorry. That's not right. The particle size is the size of each LDL molecule, and they can be big or they can be small. And particle number, how many LDL particles you have altogether. So LDL particle mass is the number you ordinarily get from your doctor. The reference range is now down, as I said, it's now down to less than 100 milligrams per deciliter, and it's very hard to get below that. So if your doctor believes that everyone should be below that benchmark, your doc's going to prescribe statins to most of their patients. Your LDL particle number is a bigger predictor of cardiovascular risk. People with familial hypercholesterolemia definitely have a higher cardiovascular risk. So particle number is how many actual particles of cholesterol you have, not how much space they take up. The LDL particle size also predicts cardiovascular risk. If you have small, dense LDL, it's more likely to get stuck in your arterial walls and cause blockages, and your LDL size can be increased. It can be increased by eating healthy fats and also by getting exercise. So inflammation definitely increases cardiovascular risk. If your blood vessels are inflamed, your body is going to attempt to repair them. It will use calcium, cholesterol, and platelets to do it. This can ultimately block your coronary or carotid arteries and lead to cardiovascular disease, myocardial infarction, which is a heart attack, or stroke. You can test the following and take measures to improve their levels. So one of the things you want to test is your high sensitivity C-reactive protein. So if you have moderately elevated C-reactive protein, you may have increased risk of cardiovascular and also periodontal disease. Periodontal disease being gum disease. High elevations greater than 10 are associated with acute illnesses like cold and flu, chronic illness and autoimmune conditions. So if you're over 10, you probably have some kind of inflammation that's not necessarily cardiovascular. So you can lower your, so if you're sort of in that, you want your high sensitivity C-reactive protein to be somewhere between 1 and 10. No, that's wrong. You want it to be below, that's wrong. You want it to be below 1. If it's between 1 and 10, you may have a higher cardiovascular risk. And if it's over 10, you probably have some other kind of inflammation. So if you have, so if you're in that, you know, between 1 and 10 spot, you can try to get your C-reactive protein down with good oral hygiene. So cardiovascular disease, your cardiovascular risk is higher if you have periodontal disease. So if you're not brushing and flossing, you're more likely to have a heart attack or stroke. Did you hear that? If you're not brushing and flossing and cleaning your teeth out, picking your teeth, shoring up the strength of your, it's not as much about shoring up the strength of your teeth. It's about getting the plaque out, getting the bacteria out from under your gums and out of your mouth. Not that you shouldn't have bacteria in your mouth. You should have good probiotic bacteria in your mouth. And there are probiotic lozenges that you can get that have the appropriate bacteria to protect you from tooth decay. And they're lozenges. You can get them at a health food store. You can get them from a naturopath. I'm not going to say brands because I'm not supposed to. But just so you know, you can get these lozenges that you can suck on, and they have the appropriate probiotic bacteria that will set up in your mouth and keep the plaque bacteria at bay. As I said, so your gum health can be lowered by with good oral hygiene, like brushing and flossing. And you can also, reduce your blood pressure with stress reduction. And if you take nutrition like beet juice, berries and fiber, and reduce inflammation with fish oil, nuts and seeds, and turmeric, all of these things can help you to bring your cardiac C-reactive protein down. But having good oral hygiene, brushing and especially flossing, you could floss, you can use a pick, you can use a toothpick, you can also get a water pick, or you can get, there are brands besides water pick. And now the water pick I found to be ungainly. It had a big reservoir and, you had to put it somewhere in your bathroom. You can now get handheld water flossers that have a little reservoir at the bottom that are basically the size of an electric toothbrush. And you can get those and you can do water flossing. I actually got one. I just haven't used it yet, and I'll have to report on how it goes, but I haven't opened it up yet. So then there's another measure called lipoprotein PLA2. And this increases the risk of atherosclerosis. It's produced by macrophages. Remember we talked about the monocytes in your blood, the macrophages clean up junk. Well, macrophages also make lipoprotein PLA2 in your arteries and contributes to the forming of your atherosclerotic plaques. And lipoprotein PLA2 will go down if you lower your LDL. It will go down with higher omega-3 fats like fish oil, higher HDL, and good oral hygiene. We talked about that already. And reducing your blood pressure and stress reduction. Because it can indicate atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries, you can do CIMT, that's carotid intima media thickness, or coronary artery calcium scoring, which are more direct measures of atherosclerosis. And a good cardiologist will be able to provide those for you. The CIMT is weird. They do this test where they put a cuff around your arm and they basically cut off the circulation to your arm, and then they see how fast it reperfuses. And if you are over a certain level of reperfusion rate, then you're considered to be normal. And mine was fine. Yay. So thank you, Dr. Thompson, for performing that test on me. Well, it was his PA, but yeah. All right. Then there's oxidized LDL, also known as OxLDL. That's going to be increased with pre or current diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and an acute myocardial infarction. If you have an acute heart attack, you might have higher OxLDL. It's also associated with metabolic syndrome, which is, metabolic syndrome is going to be your, that's going to be your, when you have high cholesterol and you're having issues with blood sugar regulation, and also with coronary artery disease, where the arteries that are feeding your heart are blocked. And so oxidized LDL inhibits the production of endothelial nitric oxide. So what that's going to do is it's going to make, if you have too much OxLDL, you're going to have less arterial elasticity, which means that your body's going to experience your arteries as damaged, and you're going to be more likely to get blockages. So OxLDL is a problem. You want to get the OxLDL down. And so nitric oxide acts as a vasodilator, and it lowers blood pressure. So nitric oxide, you want to have good nitric oxide function in your body. That's not nitrous oxide. Nitric oxide.
I was going to say, no. That sounds very...
No.
No. No.
No, and no, that no,
and
that's
no,
right.
Not at all.
No, nitric oxide. No, right. NO. That's the chemical symbol for it.
Of course.
So nitrous oxide is N2O,
mm-hmm.
and nitric oxide is no, NO. So yes, you want to have no.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you want to have no.
Yes, you want to have no.
You know, I love living with a nerd.
Yes, you want to increase mm-hmm. your no. So increasing your no by saying, yes, I will increase my no, you're going to improve your cardiovascular health.
Oh, you're starting to hurt my brain.
I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how do you increase your no? By taking nitric oxide enhancers. Beet juice is one of the best for increasing your nitric oxide function. So it's a vasodilator. So you know that they recommend that you don't take beet juice. Like if you're going to go on a bike ride, you don't want to put beet juice in your water bottle. Because
why?
Because it gives you too much. It gives you a head rush and it'll give you too much vasodilation in your head, and it might affect your circulation acutely. If you're going to use beet juice to improve your workout, you want to take it before your workout.
Okay.
Yeah. So you take it before you work. And so one of the things that I've talked about before about beet juice that's very cool is that you know how when you get on your bike, you can put them on if they want to say anything at any time.
If they would like to.
Okay. So, I think their mics are hot. So we've got, by the way, we've got a couple of bike guys here, and, you know, they may jump in at any time. We've got who? Jeremy Brazil and?
And Jed Kornbluh.
And Jed Kornbluh. Very, very nice to meet you. So they're on. They're going to be on Ron's show, and, you know, this might be interesting to them.
It's going
to
be fun.
Right. So anyway, so beet juice, the good time to take it is right before you ride. So you know how you're about to go for your ride, and maybe you have a workout to do, or you're going to go for a long ride, and part of you is like, oh, I just wanted to stay in bed and I just wanted to sit around. And you get on your bike and you're like, oh, I have to get warmed up. Now I have to do this. I have to do that loop and then I have to do my hill repeats or whatever it is you're about to do. And you're like grumbly, grumbly. And then you, after about 10 or 20 minutes, you feel better and you're like, okay, I can do this. I find that the beet juice takes that away.
Ooh.
You get right on your bike and you're like, all right, I'm ready to go.
Because maybe I should try this because I feel like this every morning.
It increases the circulation to your brain. That's why. So your
brain
lights up your brain. And so that's why that helps. So it just increases circulation. You get this jolt of nitric oxide and it's helpful. And there are beet products for athletes.
So how soon before your event do you do this?
Probably, you know, within the half hour before I get out on my bike.
Okay.
Yeah, like half an hour, 20 minutes. You probably don't want to do it right before, but if that's what you got, I would still do it. But like, you know, while you're getting dressed, take a hit of beet juice.
Okay.
You know, that'd be a nice thing to do. All right. So nitric oxide, it's not just about the beets. There's lots of other things that increase your nitric oxide. It's just that beet juice is very good. Notice how I keep saying juice and not beets, just because the nitric oxide enhancing properties are more concentrated in the juice than the actual beets.
Okay.
But you can certainly eat beets. You know, beets will help. And cacao is another nitric oxide enhancer. I made a list of them, and I don't have it in front of me.
We have beets almost every night, you know, when I
yes,
make a
I
salad,
know.
I grate beets and put them on
I
the
I know.
Salads.
We have a little bit of beets. If you're going to get enough beets, and if you're going to get enough beets to make a difference, you kind of have to have a plate of beets, you know, decent serving. So here's some other nitric oxide enhancers, which are going to enhance your cardiovascular function, whether you're an athlete or not. It's good for anybody. If you have high blood pressure, you need to be considering these things. So so foods that enhance your nitric oxide, the number one is, guess what? Beets. I already said that. All right. Garlic. So if you have a lot of garlic, now you might want, if you're upsetting, you know, people you care about by smelling like garlic, there's always chlorophyll. You can take chlorophyll products and that will, you know, tone down your smelling like an Italian restaurant as much.
Or an Italian shoemaker. We had one in Norwich that you walk into the store and it
just smells like garlic.
Oh, God, it didn't smell like leather. It smelled like garlic.
Garlic, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, eating that much garlic so that you smell is very good for your health.
Around for a long time.
Right. Well, it's really good because you're barely ever going to get sick because it's antimicrobial and it's going to be good for your blood pressure. You're not going to get cancer. There's all kinds of stuff that garlic prevents. Just meat. If you eat animal protein, it increases your, it's because they increase your CoQ10. So guess what else is a nitric oxide enhancer? CoQ10. which we talked about that you have to take if you're taking a statin. You need your CoQ10 for your performance. All right. Dark chocolate has flavanols that are nitric oxide enhancers. So, you know, you're going to eat your at least 70% dark chocolate or your cocoa products that are intended for working out, or you're going to eat 100%, you know, cacao nibs or, you know, 100% cacao powder. Leafy greens, you know, all that spinach and arugula and that sag paneer that we like to eat and all that stuff, they have lots of nitric oxide enhancing properties. Citrus fruits, so your oranges, lemons, limes, grapefruit, they all have vitamin C is a nitric oxide enhancer.
You're making me hungry.
Yeah, right. I know, right? And then don't forget your pomegranate. Hungry.
That's true.
So pomegranate has lovely antioxidants that are also nitric oxide enhancers. So if you don't care for the taste of straight up beet juice, one fun thing to do is to mix it with pomegranate juice, and then you get a nitric oxide enhancing cocktail. Nuts and seeds. If you're not allergic to them, nuts and seeds are awesome because they're high in arginine. So anything that's high in arginine is going to increase your nitric oxide function. So nuts and seeds are famous for that. And, of course, if you have herpes, so if you have genital herpes or if you have cold sores, you want to be careful in increasing your arginine. And you may still be able to eat lots of nuts and seeds if you also take lysine or eat foods that are high in lysine. And then you can do your arginine and get the nitric oxide benefits. It's not a matter of avoiding high arginine. If you're having an outbreak, you do want to avoid your nuts and seeds. But, you know, in general, if you're not getting outbreaks all the time, as long as you balance your lysine and arginine, you might not get outbreaks. All right. So that's the whole nitric oxide thing. And that's going to help you with your oxidized LDL. It's also going to help you with your asymmetric dimethyl arginine. So ADMA is associated with increased intima thickness. That's the thickness of your blood vessels. And again, you're going to have lower nitric oxide function and you're going to be more vulnerable to atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries. And then SDMA is your symmetric dimethyl arginine. That's associated with reduced kidney function. And so once again, arginine and citrulline can both be used to improve vasodilation and vascular tone. And we already talked about all the nitric oxide stuff. And again, if your ADMA is elevated, you can again consider getting calcium scoring and CMT. Now, here's a controversial one, TMAO, trimethylamine N-oxide. Supposedly, when elevated, it increases atherosclerotic risk, and it's made by gut bacteria from phosphatidylcholine, choline, and L-carnitine. All things which are good for you, and they're found in animal products. So the biggest food contributors are red meat, dairy, protein, and eggs, but also fish. And so supposedly, if you're at very high cardiovascular risk, it might be a good idea to reduce your consumption of these things. If you're not at particular risk and you see you have high TMAO and you have no other risk, you might not want to worry about it. Here's why. You'll make more TMAO if you eat a lot of fish, because fish has a lot of TMA in it, and your gut bacteria is going to turn that into TMAO. So people who eat a lot of fish are going to have higher TMAO. And one of the things that we know is in the Mediterranean populations and populations where there's a lot of fish consumed, they have lower rates of cardiovascular risk. And they probably have elevated TMAO. And I know, because I tested my TMAO, and it's a little elevated. But I eat a lot of fish.
We eat a lot of fish.
So I'm not gonna be too worried about it. If somebody's already had a heart attack or stroke and they have elevated TMAO, I might work with them on it. They're gonna be the ones who are gonna be closer to the vegetarian diet, and that will help their TMAO to come down. But if you don't have cardiovascular risk and you've elevated TMAO, I don't know if it's worth worrying about. Mark Hyman talks about this in his book, Should We Really Be Worried About TMAO? It's going to be a case-by-case thing. Then there's myeloperoxidase. When you have increased myeloperoxidase, they're associated with cardiovascular disease and heart attacks, and it's a specific marker for cardiovascular inflammation, and it's even more specific than C-reactive protein, which I talked about before. When it's present, you really want to pull out all the stops, lower your LDL, improve your diet lifestyle, improve your blood pressure, stop smoking, improve your blood sugar. That's when you want to consider your CIMT and your calcium scoring. Do your tooth your hygiene, oral hygiene, brush and floss, assess for autoimmune conditions, consider that the person might have inflamed blood vessels and bone marrow issues, because there are autoimmune conditions that can raise your myeloperoxidase. And then you also get exercise, because myeloperoxidase will rise when you actually have pieces of atherosclerosis that are falling off in your blood vessel. You're having blockages in your arteries and you actually have pieces of it floating around. So when you have high myeloperoxidase, you have to really consider that. All right. So what is CIMT? CIMT is coronary intima media thickness. It assesses the thickness of the carotid arteries and the likelihood of cerebrovascular disease. It's basically a specialized ultrasound. So they look inside your blood vessel, your carotid arteries, and see how thick the arteries are, and then they extrapolate that might be happening in your coronary arteries. And then there's cardiac calcium scoring, which is a specialized X-ray that assesses calcium deposits in your carotid arteries. So they do it in the carotid arteries because it's very non-invasive. Carotid arteries are right here.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see.
You can't see right here. Okay, for those of you who are listening very closely to the radio, get up really, really close, and she is actually running her finger up and down her neck.
Yes, the side of your neck. That is where your carotid artery is.
We're on radio here.
So if you have that, you know that ropey muscle where that attaches your ear, basically the behind your ear to your collarbone, that's called mm-hmm. your SCM, your sternocleidomastoid muscle. So if you feel that ropey muscle and then you go right in front of it and you press, you'll feel a pulse. And that's
pretty
where your carotid artery
too.
Yes, that's where your carotid artery is. Mm-hmm. Don't press too hard because you're going to press on the baroreceptors, the pressure receptors, and you might make yourself dizzy because you need circulation in your brain.
It helps.
Yeah. So, all right. So you can be a cholesterol hyperproducer or hyperabsorber. There's a test by Boston Heart Labs that assesses your absorption and production of sterols. If you're genetically inclined to absorb or produce too much sterol, this can contribute to high cholesterol. And people who eat a lot of saturated fat and poor quality fat, that's going to enhance this. Now, if you're a hyperabsorber or a hyperproducer and you have no other risk factors, like you don't have oxLDL, you don't have bad ADMA, you have high HDL and you have low LDL, that you may not have to worry about the fact you're a hyperabsorber or hyperproducer. I'm more concerned about inflammation and damaged LDL than I am about whether you have a lot of cholesterol on board, because the hyperproducer, hyperabsorber doesn't tell you about the size of the LDL, whether you have, you know, large buoyant or small dense LDL, all of that stuff. So this marker, I'm more concerned about if you have that familial hypercholesterolemia gene, or if you have other kinds of inflammation, then you would want to get your total cholesterol numbers down. But if you have no inflammation and you have high cholesterol and you have no cardiovascular risk, that would be a neat thing to do. If you have high cholesterol, you might want to consider getting that CIMT and that cardiac calcium scoring. Because if you have no atherosclerosis and your intima media thickness is fine, why are you going to bother lowering your cholesterol? There's no reason to do it. Because cholesterol, people can get heart attacks with low cholesterol, and people can never get heart attacks with high cholesterol. There, you see both. It's not a matter of the level of cholesterol that's in your body. It's a matter of how much inflammation you have.
Aren't we going back to thinking that was like 20 or 30 years ago?
Well, that's what I was saying. Ansel Keys was part of it is the research by Virchow and also Ansel Keys.
Yeah.
Ansel Keys did that study where he went to all those countries and he found that people on high fat diets had more cardiovascular disease, and he excluded the data from 15 countries that didn't bear that out. So it's bad data. Ansel Keys was wrong.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll get you the shirt.
Okay. Give me the shirt. All right. So. Anyway, so that's basically what's going on. So I wanted to do a wrap-up of the talk that I gave about cholesterol. And then I'm going to go away for 2 weeks. So
no.
Yeah, I am.
It'll be very lonely here without you.
I know, right? Mm. So I'll be back in 2 weeks, though. It'll be so I'm going to come back on the day before the 4th of July, on July 3rd.
Right.
Yeah, because I'm going to go ride my bike from Plymouth to Provincetown. Silly me. That's fun.
It is fun.
And then you wind up in P-Town. Then you get to go on a boat.
That sounds fun.
It is fun.
It is kind of cool. Then they ferry you back over from where you started.
So
and
it's a point-to-point.
Some people actually ride down from Boston to Plymouth, and then they ride from Plymouth to Provincetown, And then they take the ferry back to Boston.
So they leave at like 4 a.m., yeah.
Yeah, but they leave really early in the morning. Yeah.
Well, it's a double metric.
It's a long ride, so it's 120 miles.
So I've never done that.
The bike paths in the Cape are really nice.
Really nice.
They are. They are.
And they include the rail trail as part of the, you know, the Cape, the CCRT.
Yeah. The tourists driving the cars aren't very nice, but the bike paths are nice.
Yeah, Route 6 can be a little hairy.
You think?
Yeah, they don't put us on Route 6, though, so that's good. They put us on back roads, and they do put us on the CCRT, so that's nice. All right, so I'm going to go. So thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath. It's a call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath in 2 weeks. There will be a pre-recorded Radio Naturopath next week.
Encore episode.
Encore episode, right here at 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs.